Tuesday night. You
play. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a What a Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. Today, you join us as we sit here in the wake of Spurs losing 3-1 to Man United, and to be honest, had sort of same old story written all over it. So many mirror images with other games this season. And to help me break it down, Hunter Godson, Shawnee Walsh, Jude Summerfield and Dan Kilpatrick from the Evening Standard. Guys, thanks so much for taking the time, because I feel almost guilty now that I sit here and regularly ask you to try and find some sort of positives out of what was another really difficult week. Shawnee, how are you getting on?
Good.
Oh God, I was worried that was going to be bleak.
I'm feeling good because the game is over. I think the season is nearly over. I hope anyway. Like, God, no, it's going to be something where it gets extended until December or something. We're going to be living in this forever. It's like a glitch. Like we get, it's an FM glitch. The season goes on forever and ever and ever and ever.
We've got seven games left.
Yeah. It's a slow trudge, isn't it, Hunter, to the finish line now?
Oh, I don't even know if it's a slow. I feel like we're dead.
Did you ever watch Trigger Happy TV back in the day, where Dom Jolly used to dress up as a snail and go across pedestrian crossings?
Is that Spurs
a lot like that.
It's quite worrying as well when you look behind, just behind us, over our shoulder, that Everton have two games in hand and are only 2 points behind us. Although, that being said, they are as inconsistent as us.
It's going to be a big game, that one, isn't it? It's going to be a flipping big game, that one. two games in hand. And if they manage to steal a march on us... I mean, I'd be happy for more chaos, like the FA Cup. Just give me some chaos. I'll take that.
Yeah, for sure.
Jude, how are you getting on?
Yeah, I like the use of the phrase "in the wake of" there, because it sort of does feel every Sunday afternoon or evening, just something's dying, just from my heart and my soul every week. And it is like we're at the wake discussing it over, you know.
Did you run yesterday?
I did, yeah, but it wasn't rage, it was at lunch, so it was just sort of
okay. It's preamble. I ran last night because I ran very, very late because I was a bit miffed about Spurs, but also I was just wired after watching Line of Duty.
Oh, you're not brilliant again.
This freaking guy. I'm a junkie. I cannot get enough. I'm banging this drum. I'm dying on this hill until you guys all join in.
There was a couple of stuff.
There's the bill.
There was a couple.
I'm still integral. Like season 9 of the bill. So
integral.
You got 20 years still to go, Jim.
There was a lot of Mourinho crossovers with. With Line of Duty last night, which that made absolutely no sense to me, but I like them all anyway. So there you go.
The internet was on good form last night. Dan, how are you getting on?
Yeah, I'm good. No spoilers, because I'm about to start Line of Duty. And I mean, from the very start, like,
yes!
I've never watched any of it, but the avalanche of stuff on Twitter and WhatsApp has got too much for me. So I'm bowing to pressure and I'm going to join the mob.
I'll do it as well, Dan. I'll do it as Dan. Let's do a separate podcast.
Should we do a watch along? Should we get each other on Zoom?
Dan and Hunter's YouTube channel is just now AC12.
I think that would draw in Hunter's. We could do Spurs analogies throughout.
Well, yeah, of course. He's very like veteran Chorluka, this detective. Yeah, yeah. Lee Young Pyo.
I would watch that show.
Yeah, yeah.
Veteran Chorluka and Lee Young Pyo. Amazing.
I just seen that our Everton game's on a Friday night, so Spurs can ruin our whole weekend.
Oh,
but also, we can
not ruin the whole weekend.
We can get incredibly pissed. No, Dan went.
Oh my God, it actually is. I've got a pub reservation. Get in. Oh,
Dan, pub reservation as well.
Dan went, not ruin the whole weekend. And I went, get really pissed. The problem with the Sunday games is that you always have like this looming Monday. But Friday, you're laughing.
Yeah. I think we could. I would all back us if we manage, like, whatever happens in that Everton result. By the, if you've got a reservation at the pub, I think within 2 hours you could be suitably tipsy to make sure that you felt nothing.
I also have a pub reservation, so Sean, you know, we can sit blissfully. Danny,
well,
what
a lovely start.
Dan.
I am actually off. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So obviously something big's going to happen. You know, Jose's going to lose his job. Mm. Bearing in mind that Pochettino was sacked when I was in Greece on holiday on an island.
Oh, yeah. I remember
I had to write a piece. I just want to point out that's not ITK. That was just a grim humor.
Dan Levy.
Don't believe anything is imminent.
Dan Levy has Dan KP's holiday schedule, and he just puts in dates for when he could potentially fire Mourinho around. He's got Monday off, he's got Friday off.
It would be incredible if something major were to happen and Dan somehow missed it because he's put his phone on Do Not Disturb to watch 4 days straight of Line of Duty. Absolutely superb. Well, look, what a positive start. And we can stick with the positive stuff. So Spurs... Actually, I was about to say, Spurs lose 3-1.
I was wondering how you're going to keep it positive. And we'll stick with a positive start.
Keep it light.
If you do it in the history of the game, Hensie, we did go 1-0 up. So, you know.
Exactly. So, leading the way at half-time. Mm. Lots to get stuck into, but not loads of good stuff. Having said that, there were a couple of people that we did want to pick out. So Joe Roden, who came out after the game, and at least for Spurs fans, I think gave something for them to get their teeth stuck into and something for them to sit there and go, oh, my word, that's good that there is someone standing there who feels the same way that I do. And off the back of what was probably... up there with our better performers in the side. Shawnee, were you impressed with Roden yesterday?
Yeah, I think with Roden, it always seems like, oh, wow, this guy is not the one who's been giving away goals directly. And that's a good thing. Like, especially just because, especially with the second goal, the Cavani goal, like Ori and Dyer, I don't know what on earth they're doing. And with some of the pressing, like it was hard to really figure out what the game plan was. So it's nice to have a player who, regardless of what he has been told, or what he hasn't been told, is still quite competent. And it's good that he's this kind of character. He came out after the game, after a loss, after like a quite like demoralising loss as well. And he was just kind of putting up this fight and he was showing that, you know, he gives a shit. And, you know, when things aren't going your way at all, when we're sat here and we talk about how numb we are about another bad Spurs result, it's good that there are guys in that dressing room who like really, really care about what's going on.
Yeah, and I love what you said, Shawnee, there about the in a defence full of errors, it's rare that you are pointing the finger at Roden, Dan, and saying, oh, he's let us down there, or he's the one who stopped concentrating at a key moment or ran out of position.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did struggle a bit with Cavani yesterday. I don't think he was brilliant or anything, but I think the kind of narrative around Roden is that he's in a really difficult situation and he's the best of a bad bunch and he's not kind of letting himself down. And I think that's about right. I mean, it does look to me as though, you know, if you put him in a really high functioning defensive unit or, you know, just a side with a bit more confidence and a bit more organisation and a bit more consistency back there, then I think he would be doing very well. And I think, you know, everyone can see that he's got the attributes. He's pretty raw, but it's pretty clear to me that, you know, while it's kind of hard to see perhaps a long-term future for any of the other centre-backs as it stands, whether that could change, it's very easy to see kind of Roden being a big part of the defence under, you know, under any manager. You know, he's obviously a decent player kind of with and without the ball. So I think, you know, there's something to build around there at the back. And, you know, I guess the frustrating thing is that he just hasn't played more this season. But, you know, this is all kind of good experience for him and hopefully not sort of too damaging for him to be part of this really chaotic back line at the moment.
I don't think it'll be damaging for him, but because it's always a learning process for a young centre-backs like that. If anything, I think what he showed after the game is that he's someone who can come out and sort of take it on the chin. I think most people within this squad now, judging by how the players reacted after the game, know that something is horrifically wrong with what's happening, and this isn't by any, like, this isn't a normal team just underperforming. Something is very wrong, shown by the idea again that, I mean, our best centre back again isn't on the pitch, and I didn't hear anything as to why he wasn't playing. Maybe I missed something. Why wasn't Alderweireld playing? Does anyone know?
No,
I mean,
there's been no explanation. Really.
No explanation. So again, like, you know, these are not normal circumstances. I think under normal circumstances, if you're going to play Roden, you sort of need Alderweireld next to him to sort of solidify the defence. You know, Dyer's been dropped out and has been, rightfully so, he's dropped out. He's brought back in against a United side who had Edinson Cavani, whose movement was absolutely brilliant yesterday and caused troubles throughout the game. So you sort of think, for Roden, he shouldn't look too much into this. I think we've seen moments that suggest he's going to be a very solid defender, if not the most mobile and brilliant on the ball. But, you know, and I saw enough, I've seen enough for him and to think, you know, it's good for him to be on the pitch.
Yeah, it feels like his ceiling, at least, is a standard Premier League player. Like, he could play mid-table for someone, which is kind of where we're cratering to at the moment, so that might be coming handy. You do think that... He said the other day, like, how many times has a player said before or after a game, like, there are good players in the squad? Roden said it the other day, that we do have quality, and in the first half, we did look quite good when we were trying to control the game. And I think we'll get onto a bit later, but when you have a player as good as Lo Celso who can help make us the protagonists when we've so often been the antagonists this season, like, it's so, we'll figure it out regardless of which of the key players stay and go, and if the manager goes or not, there is still going to be enough quality. I genuinely believe that we will land on our feet within the next year or so, that there's enough good here, even if Kane were to leave, and I know that's a big thing, but there's enough good here that we can still be fine from all this.
Just before we move on to Lo Celso, we did talk on the pod the other week about the idea of moving towards a defence that featured younger players, because it's better to feature the younger players and hopefully see some growth than kind of just have the same thing week in, week out. Do we feel like with Roden that still stands, or do people feel differently now that we've had another game where we've conceded 3 goals?
I still believe in that. I still think we should be trying to bed in some younger players. But as I sort of said before, I think you always, with that, you always do have to have an older head within that, who, for me, is Toby Alderweireld is our best centre-back by a country mile. You play a couple of younger guys around him, and was it the Villa game? I'm sort of getting hazy with all the football,
but
the Villa
just merging.
Did Alderweireld play the Villa game? Was that the last game?
Ill for the Villa game.
Then
he was in test
break. Played Arsenal.
Played at Arsenal.
He had a long run with him and Sanchez at the back, and he looked quite decent defensively.
I think. Yes, Mourinho has tried every single, you can't deny that he has tried every single pairing this season and it hasn't worked, which, you know, make of that what you will. They can't all be bad defenders. But
Hunter, am I right? So I think I saw a stat to say it was his 17th different back four. Version of his back, or back five.
It was 16 different combinations. That includes the fullbacks.
Yeah, okay. So
just incredible when you think about it.
And that defence had only played once, I believe, as a four. That was at Chelsea in the 0-0 in November.
Well, you know my thoughts on that, Hainsey. I think defences should just be, centre-backs especially, you pick your two and they're your two and that's it. And you rotate in the league, in the cup, sorry. But in the league, you have your two and you push on, you persevere with them and you build around that. And... You know, that's just my personal preference. But yes, going back to your question, I'd love to see Tanganga get a few more minutes. I mean, it's arguably Aurier's fault for the third goal yesterday. Just completely goes to sleep and allows Cavani to just sort of walk past him. But up to that point, I didn't think he had a terrible game. Reguilon had a good game when the ball was at his feet, but his passing was really poor yesterday. And for the again... Was it the third goal? For the second and third goal, yeah. I mean, again, look, we can point to errors, but you really have to look beyond the errors, don't you? You really have to look a little bit deeper and go, why are they so exposed? Why are we so open? And I'm sure we'll come on to it. You know, I'm sure we'll come
Let's do Lo Celso. Let's do it. Because yeah. he was, in the first half, I thought, in a game where you were clearly going to have to be combative but also have real quality, he was a joy in the first half and he was great to watch.
Yeah, we had our Spanish team had an exclusive with Juan Foyf last week as well, and he was asked about Lo Celso and what he thinks about him, and he was like so insistent that he's already kind of exploded with the ability he's got. Like, he's the heartbeat of the team. And Dyer said to him before, like, I can't believe this guy doesn't play for Real Madrid or Barcelona. And I think the annoying thing is that we've only really seen him when we've been bad. Like, he was scarcely featuring when we were in that run to go to the top of the league. Like, he was fit last year when Kane and Son were injured, and during the restart when we were just bad in general. It's really annoying that, like, he's the best player when we're crap, and I really want to see him when we're playing well and how he fits into that, because that could be like the missing link in like the front four as well. Like, just to have a extra player. Like, Mourinho talks about it after, I can't remember which game it was, but he said like it's good to have a couple of different options at number 10 now. And
we did get to see yesterday the three together that we've been asking for as well. I mean, in the first half.
Yeah, it's a good midfield. It's a full, you know, we're playing 4-5-1. We pressed the ball higher up the pitch in the first half. Lo Celso sort of leading the highest out of the three in midfield. And, we pressed high. We tried to keep the ball. We didn't keep the ball particularly well because, our passing in general at the moment is lackluster. But when we did, those rare moments, it was like these are really good footballers who can keep the ball, and it felt like a confidence thing more than a these players can't play in this formation thing. It felt like if we played on the front foot, we'd create we're more likely to create chances, and that came with the goal. The goal is a glimpse of what these really quality players can put together. It's just three or four really smart passes, but we ripped them apart. And that happened, I mean, it only happened once. It happened twice. And we created, in those first 10 minutes, it happened twice. And we created two fairly good opportunities that arguably, you'd say, I think it was Moura and Son, should do better with them. But it's just that thing of, as the game goes on, the confidence just seems to be sapped out by the substitutions, by Lo Celso coming off the pitch. And then everyone just starts shrinking into their shell. Even if Mourinho, I mean, by this point, if you're still claiming Mourinho doesn't want them to drop beyond the halfway line, I'm not sure if there's any hope for you. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what, Hunter? You've sort of perfectly segued for us there. I think we've got to come onto the bad, and we have to talk about the substitutions. Dan, I only ever exclusively read your work and Jude and Sean's, obviously, but accidentally yesterday I came across Jonathan Wilson's piece. He wrote pre-match about the Reguilon Bergwijn substitution back in the Liverpool game, back in, I think, November. And I think that's why this defeat was quite difficult to stomach, because that's been a facet of our game that seemingly has led to errors and panic and instability over and over and over. And yet we keep just doing the same thing again, and yesterday was no different with the substitutions.
Yeah, the piece from Jonathan Wilson was incredibly prescient. For those that didn't read it, it was essentially the premise was that when it was 1-1 at Anfield in December and the game was quite finely poised, Spurs were having plenty of joy on the counter-attack, even though Liverpool were basically running the ball. Mourinho brought on Reguilon for Bergwijn,
yeah.
And then Spurs naturally kind of retreated. It was two left backs and tried to hold on to what they had, and Liverpool grew in confidence and obviously got the late winner. And yesterday I thought exactly the same thing happened. At 1-1, it was actually fairly finely poised, the game. I thought, you know, United were on the front foot and obviously sensing blood, but because of that, Spurs were having a bit of joy in the counter-attack. I think Kane had that effort saved the near post by Henderson, and actually there was there were openings there, like it could have swung either way. And Solskjaer was decisive and brave. You know, he put Greenwood on. And Mourinho took off Lo Celso and put on Sissoko, which was not, you know, it isn't decisive and brave. And that's when, you know, on the bench, he had Bale, he had Dele, he had Lamella. He did eventually come on, you know, shortly afterwards, actually, but still is the most kind of conservative of those three. And if you include Vinicius as well, he's the most conservative of the four attackers Mourinho could have brought on. So it was two kind of pretty uninspiring changes that are really more about kind of work off the ball than ability to do something on it. And I think, you know, I just saw a few people on kind of WhatsApp or my social media, or whatever, just saying as soon as those substitutions were made, the game was only going one way. And I kind of totally agreed. It was bravery being rewarded from Solskjaer and Mourinho's kind of fear getting the better of him again and that costing Spurs. So the Jonathan Wilson piece is still worth reading post-match because it more or less told the story of what happened during the game.
Yeah. And when Sissoko came on, there were times when he was even playing as like a third centre-back. Like he was dropping so deep. And it was such a contrast from the first half where Højbjerg and Dier were kind of like marshalling the backline up the pitch, trying to squeeze United as much as we could. And then it was just completely different at 1-0 and at 1-1. And how many times are we going to come in and say, oh, you just knew that was going to happen?
I think you could see that were going to be made like before the game even kicked off. But what was annoying is that I think Fred and McTominay have both been booked really early on. And if they brought someone on to like drive at them, I think Shaw and Maguire got booked later as well. But bring someone on to run at them and to get them doing some defending, and maybe, you know, we'll get a man advantage from that. And that seems like quite a moo thing to do, and yet it was just sort of, you know, we'll go by the playbook of Sissoko, Lamella. Oh, we've gone one down. Okay, let's bring on Bale and we'll see what you can do.
Well, that's exactly it. Like, you just feel like Mourinho 15 years ago would have smelt blood himself there and thought, you know, they're there for the taking, and maybe brought on four-time European Cup winner Gareth Bale instead of Sissoko.
I think the one of the other kickers with Jonathan Wilson's piece was that he sort of went into a lot of the things. I mean, like we said, we've seen them week in, week out, but he went into a lot of the kind of the ins and outs of why these results keep happening, and then kind of led to this idea of parody. I don't know if you guys saw that bit, but it was like managers ultimately will stick around long enough to make a parody of themselves because they're so desperate to do the thing that is them. They don't do the thing that's sitting right in front of them. And I just thought that was so apt for yesterday. I thought that literally the option to win the game was so abundantly clear and sitting there, but the option to do the Mourinho thing just completely clouded any judgment. You know, I really struggled with this Sissoko change to understand what the intention was of that, you know?
Living in a David Squires comic.
It was to hold out the game. we dropped into a 4-2-3-1. Ndombele pushed forward into the Lo Celso role, and then Sissoko and Højbjerg just literally sitting in front of the back line. But it just, as Dan and Sean have said, it just encouraged them. It was just like, and to Sean's point again, Mourinho 10 years ago sees that McTominay, they were rattled. Like the game had got very scrappy and very aggressive. And
McTominay red was there, wasn't it?
Well, McTominay should have been sent off. I mean, it means nothing, right? It means absolutely nothing. But McTominay should have been sent off for basically a rugby tackle on Højbjerg with like three or four minutes to go. I couldn't care less if he stayed on the pitch, to be honest. But my point is there were some heads gone. And even when they were 2-1 up, there were some quite rogue tackles going on. A lot of people lunging in for the ball. Fred went in for the ball twice when I thought, oh, if he nicks it away there, that's the second yellow card.
Pogba elbowed Aurier in the face.
Yeah, well, I did tweet at the time. I know you guys are all at the stadium, just me and Jude at home. but I did. They really, really, really breezed over that. Like nothing had happened at all. It was to the point where it was kind of like a bit bizarre. It was like, and I tweeted, I think if that was roles reversed and Aurier had thrown his sort of, not, I'm not saying Pogba did it on purpose. He stepped across him and he's caught him in the face. I don't think he meant to do it on purpose.
It's a red card, though.
You've just seen them given, haven't you? That's the point.
And think about, I said that when Lamela got Martial sent off in the 6-1. I tweeted it yesterday when the goal was allowed. The amount of crap that United have got away with over the years is why that goal being disallowed was so sweet and so funny. Because it just, even just us against Man United alone, like the Mendes stuff, the Nanny thing, like Gomez, God, like just all this kind of, just all this nonsense. That's why it was so good when that goal got disallowed. Like, and we were right, the heads were completely gone, and halftime came at such a good time for them, because if there were 10 more minutes to play in that half, there could have been a red card, we could have got another goal, it could have been exactly like what happened in the 6-1.
Should we just quickly do that? I was going to sort of save that for the beautiful, but let's do that in kind of leading to the ugly then. Let's talk about that incident in isolation, because the fallout off the back of it was horrendous on social media with some of the abuse that Son got. And this comes off the back of Davinson Sanchez getting abused last week or just over a week ago, which is just sickening as well. But the incident itself, I mean, again, we're hugely biased on here and we're seeing it through lily white tinted specs, but I just didn't get what all the fuss was about I understand why United fans are annoyed. I had Darren Fletcher sitting about 8 meters in front of me and he was going ballistic. But I just, to me, as soon as I saw it, I was like, that's completely in keeping with 95% of the decisions that have been made this year.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. Someone messaged me saying, do you really think that's a foul? And I was like, it doesn't matter if I think it's a foul, does it? At all. That's the point that I think lots of people make. It doesn't matter if those have been the rules for ages. And everyone just wants to get in a furor about these things because that's how the world works now. But I sat and watched it and gone, yeah, it's incredibly soft. Incredibly, incredibly soft. But he's flicked him in the face. Son's obviously rolled around on the floor and made it much worse, as a professional footballer does. You know, we see these things happen all the time. But yeah, the outrage and then the racist abuse is just, I just cannot comprehend how someone's head goes there. And I spent a good period of yesterday afternoon just reporting various accounts like, yeah, you're gone. I just cannot believe that's where people's heads go to. But you know, probably says more about them than me.
It's really, really odd. Mm. It's really, really baffling.
It's so commonplace now. It's getting to the point where it's not even newsworthy, which is really depressing and alarming. Yeah. Like, it happens so often, it's almost kind of not noteworthy anymore. It's just the background noise to this weird Premier League season is players being racially abused on social media. It's really depressing we've got to that point. And as I said, it almost at the point where, you know, just from my point of view for work, you know, had that happened a year ago, it would have been, you know, the back page of our newspaper. There would have been a big fallout. I would have had work to do this morning. And now it's just, well, that happens every week. You know,
more players been abused.
We know the drill. Now it's not a big story, unfortunately. And that's really, really bleak.
It's crazy though, isn't it? I mean, we're not going to solve it here and now. And I guess it's. I've read a very interesting piece by Jonathan Liu about it, and which probably lays out the key things that need to change in football. It's just a matter of when do these things actually start happening?
It's got to be soon. It does feel like everything's in a state of purgatory at the moment, doesn't it? With kind of like the lay of the land, like so many rule changes that need to happen. The fans coming back, particularly for Spurs, it feels like we're sort of treading water through to the end of this season. I just wanted you just to pick up a little bit on something that was said earlier on. I think Hunter might have said it, but it was Sean. But it was just like this. I thought the Spurs fans' reaction was quite funny to the goal, because I don't actually think that anyone was celebrating us scoring off the back of Son going down at that, in the sense that they thought Spurs were going to win. They were just sort of seeing it as like a, oh, wow, well, one's gone our way kind of thing.
It was it like concluded the comedy of the last 5 minutes of play, really. That's what that was the best thing about it.
It's just like, and scene.
Yeah. It was just pure chaos, wasn't it? And that's sort of what we've had to embrace for the last month or so. I don't think anyone was like, yes, that's a massive step towards 3 points. Just because, you know what, we've seen the game that plays out like this a lot of times this season. Spurs take the lead a lot. And then, you know, the second half usually gets a bit worse. And then sort of the inevitable happens. And there are I saw our boss Scott getting quite riled about like Spurs fans having a good time and stuff like that. And I was just thinking, if United play with any like smidge of quality here, because they were poor in the first half, they were getting riled, they got riled up by the incident. But if they play with any amount of quality and up their intensity just slightly, they would win, just because of how Tottenham approach second halves, or you know, how they're perceived to approach second halves, whatever.
Yeah, I did message Scott Jude and said, I said to him,
give you the 3 points.
I said, you need it. Like, I wouldn't take Spurs fans being happy with what they've seen play out as a slight on United. It's got nothing to do with you. Don't worry about that.
If anything, it's not embarrassing you, for it's United. Me.
We're living in our own pantomime at the moment. So it's just like, whoa, it's another thing.
Pointing the finger and laughing at United. It's just like everything's messed up.
To go back to that point though, Hensy, what we're like in the second half, but surely Mourinho knows what Manchester United are like in the second half, in that they're the best team in the country currently in second half of games. So we can't possibly just sit back and expect our already shaky defence to just soak up this. And you have to give credit where it's due. I thought Pogba was utterly brilliant. I thought Cavani was brilliant yesterday. And I just thought, God, they've got the quality that we're going to really have to keep the momentum going. And we just, as soon as we didn't, I have to say, I was very close to turning it off, because I was like, this is just, it's just so, so predictable.
Yeah, did everyone see the...
Yeah, go on, Johnny, sorry, mate.
Did everyone see the graphic from Sky Sports about like the Spurs losing hold of their leads and stuff? I got it here. It's like, so Spurs have scored first 19 times this season. That's second highest in the Prem. Ahead at halftime 16 times, second highest again. Failed to win when ahead at halftime 7 times. That's bottom. Points dropped from winning positions, 18. That's joint 19th. Goals conceded in the last 10 minutes, 9. That's joint last. And points dropped in the last 10 minutes, 11. That is last altogether.
I feel so a spreadsheet coming on.
what's your point, Sean?
What point are you trying to make here, mate?
If you are trying to make a point, I am not getting it.
I did over my head.
I was reading Jack Pitbrook's piece this morning that said it's 8 times now that Spurs have been ahead before or just after the break or near enough to it. And if they'd won all of those games, they'd be second, 6 points off City. And you just, you do wonder if we just played football on the front foot for that. Sure, we'd concede goals, but this season we'll just have a big asterisk next to it with a what if. That's it. What if Spurs played for the full 90? And we'll never know. We'll never know.
Yeah. Should we just quickly in the ugly just do the Mourinho post-match comments as well? Sometimes he seems to manipulate the media with mastery that only few have managed over the years. Sometimes you end up with bread and cheese and a whole load of absolute gubbins. And,
but absolutely did the job though.
Yeah.
Not for you. Not for you, Dan. I saw your headline. Not for you.
But I mean, I still wrote about it, didn't I? I still spent my energy on that, not on Spurs defensive failings or whatever else. So
I believe it's changing. I think it's changing. I think yesterday had an air of desperation about the nature of crowbarring it into the press conference, because people were just not really interested in that comment that Solskjaer made, because it was irrelevant. Mm. It became irrelevant. We lost 3-1. It wasn't 1-1.
It caused a lot of confusion with the Spurs pack, because we're obviously not following Solskjaer every week. And apparently he kind of always says this stuff about
he trips over his words quite a lot.
Not getting dinner. Yeah. So I remembered after the 6-1, he said the same thing about Lamella. Like, if he was my son, he wouldn't be getting any dinner tonight. So I was like, is Mourinho referencing a kind of 8-month-old quote here? I mean, what's going on? But then it turned out he'd also said that about Son in a TV interview post-match, which Mourinho had obviously heard. I think it was kind of diversion. You know, it was diversionary tactics to try and kind of deflect from, I guess, the other bigger issues. And, you know, it's still kind of theatre and panto, whether it's as effective or not. I probably agree with you, Ben, that it's just not anymore, because you can't look beyond the kind of problems of Spurs. But yeah, I think there was no accident that it was this kind of cryptic nonsense about bread and cheese and this kind of amusing line about Solskjaer being a bad dad. It was all very kind of deliberate.
I might start willfully misinterpreting his things, like bread is bread, cheese is cheese. What he means by that is my low block no longer works, and I'm tactically not where I used to be.
Is that what he's saying? My low block of cheese?
Yeah. I think that's right. When you think about a block of cheese, if you don't eat it within a certain amount of time, it can go bad.
Does keep for a long time, though.
Yeah. About 18 years.
Amazingly, though. I mean, amazingly, we still... There was still this point at the end of the press conference where he was so eager to ensure that quote was the one that did the rounds. You know, it's sort of like, I'm amazed that none of you have asked about it. It's almost like desperate to get it out and to have the goosebumps walk away as he exited to the side of the stage. It just was, I found, for me, as again, taking any sort of other journalist or media hat off and just putting Spurs hat on, I just want to hear you talk about why we didn't win the game and what went wrong. I don't care about Ollie's son. If he, like, literally, I'm sure he's phenomenally well fed. Just that in the bin. Just tell me why we didn't win the game.
I'm amazed Mourinho even knew about the quote, because being at the stadium, you realise that once the match ends, like, Mourinho will get dragged to 3, 4, 5 different interviews and press conferences and do all the kind of TV stuff, the club stuff, then he'll speak to the journos, and in between all that, he'll probably go speak to the team. I'm really surprised he even knew that Solskjaer had even said that.
It had people messaging him. But I mean, it was more unfair and more kind of nonsensical that he expected us, you know, as reported on Zoom, to be aware of it, because it was a TV quote. It wasn't like Solskjaer had come in and said that to us.
But it could be to anyone, Dan. It could be to any one of the 10 TV stations that were there as well.
Yeah, wasn't it to BeIN as well? It wasn't to Sky, was it?
Well, I don't know. I was sent it as a TV quote.
You're a disgrace, Dan. You should have watched them all.
Come on, Dan. You're supposed to be sprinting around the stadium. well, king of the narrative. Does it again? Yeah, I mean, newsflash, Chainsy, you're never going to find out why we're not winning. Not in those. Anyway.
Go on, Jude. What are you going to say, mate?
Well, yeah, just when he in the past, when he's talked about football heritage or, you know, being a specialist in failure, you always thought there's some sort of point to what he's saying. And I know it's the whole deflection and whatever, but at this point, it is just like, yeah, tell us how, you know, we failed to win that game, and or at least talk with a sense like you're looking to the future, like we go on to next week or we go back to training and we have a look at what we did wrong. Because at the moment, it's just the same game being played out every week.
I think there was when I did the post-match show for Spurs, there was a really lovely section that Mickey Hazard did where he said, I don't really mind it. Realistically, if Spurs lose, they lose. But the whole ethos of the club is about daring and trying to be something and trying to do something great. And you can't let that identity slip, because the fans won't forgive you. And I thought that was so true and so telling. And when you actually sit there and you think about what Mickey Hazard had only played 120 games for Spurs in 2 stints, but he won the UEFA Cup and he won the FA Cup. So you can't tell me that a guy that's done that doesn't know what he's talking about when it comes to identity. Like, that's a guy, we won the UEFA Cup with him on penalties, I believe. Do you know what I mean? He still found a way to do it in a Spursy way, but he still won a UEFA Cup. So I'm not prepared to write off this idea that the fans have just got it wrong, because
Even beyond that, like Jose said, that he said it's going to be hard for us now to get in the top six, and we've been in the top six since about 2009, and then before that we were out for 2 years out of five. Like, it's been a long, long time since we've had to drop out of that. Even under Sherwood, we came fifth or sixth. Like,
also 3 points off.
We got about 70 points with Sherwood.
Yeah. and United are the last big 16 that we have to face, right? I know we got Leicester on the last day, but in terms of like the traditional big six, I think we've knocked them all off now. So
I think they've knocked us off, Sean.
Yeah, we see like lads.
Get out of here!
Cheers for coming.
there was a big thing of like a month ago that, you know, he wasn't backed in the market. It's not his players, and whatever. Don't get it twisted. He got backed, and these are his players. These are I think the only player he probably doesn't want the club right now, probably Dele or Bale, but who are two good players. So it's a massive, massive failure to be looking at this going into this final stretch of the season saying top six is going to be hard. That, you know, what more can we do? We play unbelievably awful football once we're 1-0 up. We've got the two highest scores from open play in the Prem as well.
And
a cup final.
That should be top six minimum. If you've got the two
anything
highest.
Can happen on a cup final day, lads. Anything can happen.
Anything could happen. They could win 10-0. They could win 20-0.
Let's finish on a positive though. There was another glimpse, another moment for us all to take optimism and hope from, with Kane and Lucas and Ndombele and Son linking up for what was a gorgeous goal. And I suppose, Hunter, that probably comes back to your point, right, about what if, that you can see us playing that bit of foot when you think, wow, that, like, if we just stay on the front foot.
Yeah. You just never know. If you stay on the front foot, you never know. You're in the game if you stay on the front foot. You know, the counter-attacking we've been trying for the last 4 months, it just hasn't worked. Like, it hasn't been anywhere near as effective. And you just, after seeing goals like that, and there have been glimpses like that in games where we scored really quality goals, and you do sort of turn around to the other Spurs fans and go, God, we do have some really good players who have the ability to do that. And that was really one of those. It is a rare glimpse now, but it's totally what all of them are capable of. I think I read Jack Pitbrook's article this morning and he called it a forbidden treat, and I was like, I can't believe that's what we've got to the point where good goals and good attacking play is like, ooh, it's like naughty. But that's where we're at, but it was a brilliant goal, and it's quality throughout. You know, the ball into Kane's touch, and then his movement off to create the space for Lucas, who does brilliantly to weight it across to Son, because we've seen those balls go wrong quite often for Spurs in the last couple of years. And then Son makes the finish look very easy, but I don't think it actually is that easy. He still has to beat Henderson, who had a fantastic game again. I think he's a quality keeper, Henderson.
Do you remember a few weeks ago, we almost did a carbon copy of looking at a goal like this, only I think it was Kane that scored it. And we said, how many of those would you score out of 10? And I think it was even harder yesterday, the Son finish.
Yeah. It was left foot as well. I haven't got a left foot, so
it just becomes an air shot then, doesn't it? Right, to finish up, let's put a smile back on people's faces. So 12th of April today in the UK, sorry if you're listening elsewhere and this is not the case for you, but in the UK, particularly for us that are, for those of us that are based in the south, there is going to be a mass migration back towards some semblance of normality, with pubs opening again, restaurants available, pubs available for outside getting a beer, and restaurants available for outside dining, and hairdressers and salons open again. So we are going to ask very quickly, if you could go for a beer, go for a haircut, or go and get dinner with a Spurs player, who would they be? So we'll start with a beer. Who do you most want to get a beer with now that you can again?
Dyer.
Really, Eric Dyer, so intelligent guy.
I think he'd be good company. Yeah, I think
Dan's be looking for a ruckus.
You just see Dan and Eric climbing over the bar stools to get to someone else for a tear up.
I'm just thinking, you want to have good conversation. You want to have stuff in common. You want to be able. I think and he did this kind of interview with the Evening Standard magazine that I picked up. Where it's the one where he said he would like his ashes to be scattered at the stadium, which was taken out of context, by the way. And I want to make that clear. He actually said he didn't have any great connection to anywhere in London, so that would be as good a place as any. But he came across as he's. I think he's quite kind of cool and hipster, Eric Dyer. And obviously I'm not, but I'd like to think. I think
you're cool, Dan.
Enjoy like a craft ale together in like quite a trendy pub. That's what
nice.
I'm
thinking. Nice.
I think anyone else? You know, I think after that video the other week with Bale, I'd like to go with Joe Roden. He's got like a dry sense of humour.
Yeah, I liked Joe.
I like that.
You could talk about UFOs yourself. As well. Yeah.
I'm not saying they don't exist.
Yeah, that was really good. That was really good. I have to say
that was great fun. Content. That hurt as well, seeing Gareth Bale having that much fun.
Oh. Well, that's why he's there. That's why he's there. He's at like Butlins now, basically, with his mates.
Oh, your job, Benji.
Yeah.
Going around on quad bikes.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'd go Sonny. I think he'd take me to a nice cocktail bar.
Classy.
Somewhere really classy, yeah.
He'd
yeah.
pay,
really nice.
Definitely.
We're in South Korea as well. We're not in London. We're in South Korea. Cool. I've gone to him.
Jude?
I reckon I'd go Delhi then, with all those taken. I reckon he'd know bar, you know, that has all the games and stuff like that. And we just go and, you know, get Fortnite set up somewhere. Or like one of those ones where they have the hoops that you can shoot in. Stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
I love that. Like
Dave and Buster's.
Sounds like you're going bowling, Jude.
Is yeah.
Jude's going to All Star Lane.
Jude's going to Elephant and Castle upstairs.
Wii Sports.
Yeah. Ending what's karaoke.
What's that place in Central Park with the, like, the arcade?
Oh, yeah.
Haircut. Who are you going for a haircut with?
Oh, he's got the wildest. Got hair. Maybe Sergio Aurier. He got a couple of lockdown trims. He knows
he knows good, yeah. He knows good guys.
Too. Yeah, but he doesn't give a fuck about legal haircuts.
I think Gazzaniga.
Quite a good kind of...
Oh, yeah, Alderweireld's got...
Decent fresh trim, isn't he, quite often?
I'm convinced it's just like a Lego hair that he just puts on every day.
The Arteta look.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Gazzaniga because that obviously he's at Elche, so it means I can go elsewhere. I can go and enjoy a bit of sun.
I didn't know you could go elsewhere. Juan Foy, what are you up to?
Your little D.
Yeah.
Okay, finally, who are you going for dinner with?
You see, I think Dan took mine. I was quite up for going for dinner. Can I go for dinner with Pochettino?
Dinner with Poch, and the thing is, you get a drink with Poch as well because that you'd get a great red wine in.
And now that he's in Paris as well,
I'll go. I'm gonna put it out there and say I'll go with Gentle Ben. I think I could break him. I think he's got hidden.
You
depth.
Think he'd go bad? You no, think no, you could turn
no,
him?
Think,
like...
No, I think I'd break him in the sense that I'd get, you know, over dinner you could get him to open up, and I think he's got hidden depths. I think he's probably a really like sound and interesting bloke. He just comes across as a bit kind of straight and a bit dare I say, sort of a bit dull.
You were with him yesterday, Hainsey, weren't you?
I think he's honestly yesterday. I think, like you said. No, I think what you said is spot on. I think he's actually a really thoughtful guy. I thought you got that from the Amazon Prime doc as well. I think he came across really well, and that sort of came across as someone that actually can read a room quite well. And actually read tonality quite well. I think Sergio Reguilón seems like great fun as well.
Mm. I think he's a good ham.
Yeah,
good bloody good ham. And I am at pains to stress that somehow the Eric Lamella fan club has not put him forward for anything. This is outrageous.
Oh no, he's after dinner, isn't it?
He's calling you at 4 a.m. like, come round. But
Yeah, when, on June 21st, when we do Who
I've changed mine from Potts to...
Eric Lamella with glow sticks somewhere in London.
I've just remembered Jao Sacramento hasn't been mentioned in a while, so my dinner would be with Jao about his future work prospects.
Really, really romantic, can we? Little Italian in Soho.
He's coming around to mine, mate.
You see Hunter leaning in the kiss from miles away.
I reckon Højbjerg is a great shout for dinner, to be honest. Oh, a good Viking dinner. And like when the food comes, he'd bang on his table like, yeah, come on.
We should have just done this. Sean, you were right. We should have just done this instead of talking about United for the whole show. But it's been great fun today, guys. Thank you so much, as always, to Hunter, Jude, Sean and Dan. They're all a great follow on Twitter, so do make sure you check out their social channels. If you would like to leave us a review and a rating or subscribe to the pod, that would be massively appreciated. And any reviews that we get in, I promise we'll read next week on the show. So any reviews that come in, we'll make sure that we give you a shout out on the show next week. Okay, next up is Everton Friday night, which is an interesting one. So let's get back together again, do a quick chat about Everton before the weekend, because I'm giving them a we can all go and drown our sorrows after the game. But yeah, enjoy your week, and hopefully Spurs haven't left you in a position where you can't. Stay nice and cheery. Pubs are open today. Go and get a haircut. See you all soon.